steal one for Dodonov for the winner, and he scores! Evgeny Dodonov in overtime! What a win for the Golden Knights in Dallas!
Blackhawks get the puck down into the slot, and a shot by Jones! Went off the blocker, and now the Leafs countering. Up ahead to Nylander, a breakaway, he's in on goal! Scores! Holy mackerel! Willie Nylander wins it in overtime on a breakaway!
TSN 1200.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. It's 8:15 here on a Thursday morning with J.R. Zimmer and Hammer. TSN Hockey Insider Mike Johnson will join us in just mere moments. I'm thinking, Zimmer, that Evgeny, as he was known here in Ottawa, Dadonov, and he did not perform up to expectations last year. That's part of the reason he's no longer the Ottawa with the Ottawa Senators, and the fact that he was owed another $11.5 million on a rebuilding team. Have you ever come across a player before that changed the pronunciation of his last name in the hopes that it may change his luck? Because he's now Dadonov and not Dadonov any longer.
Maybe he already had creditors in Vegas after him, so he wanted... I thought you were going to say, is he going to show Ottawa when he comes in Thursday? He's like, wow, you know what? We're going to make you pay. We're going to ship you off to Vegas.
Does Evgeny Dadonov, is he going to get his own video feature during the first TV timeout?
Thanks, Daddy.
All right, absolutely. All right, let's get to the phone lines and welcome our TSN Hockey Insider Mike Johnson, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
I am doing very well. And you know what? Dadonov is not the only one. Like, Andre Sekera has changed his name like seven times in the NHL. Sekera, Sekeresh, Sekera.
We had to go through the whole Chiasson thing.
And Chiasson. He's Chiasson in the States, and he's Chiasson with a nice little French roll to it. So, and even Zach Parise used to be Parise, and now he became Parise. So, you know, I don't get it. And, of course, the worst of them all, John Tavares. It's a bit of a thing for broadcasters. They want to get the names right, and people love to, you know, tweet at me saying, his name is Tavares, you idiot. And I'm like, I've spoken to John.
Tavares.
He says Tavares. But he also says, I don't care. Either way is fine. I'm like, well, no, just tell me what you want me to say. And he's like, well, my mom says Tavares, my dad says Tavares. I'm like, you're not helping. Mm. You are not helping.
I thought, according to Joe Bowen, it's Johnny Toronto. He's gone with that way easier.
And it's Wee Willie Nylander. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Johnny, I got to ask you, though, if he is modeling the new Lululemon gear, which I really like, does that mean Johnny Tavares is automatically on the team?
No, although it's a good point by you.
I look at that stuff automatically and I think, well, if he's modeling, he's on the team. That was just my immediate...
You're talking about the Olympic team wear.
Yeah, that's my immediate reaction, to be honest with you.
And it didn't resonate with me like that, but that makes sense, because it'd be weird. You build this whole campaign about a guy, and then I'm like, last cut.
I got my gear. I'm ready.
Plane left an hour ago.
The lemon gear you want. Yeah, exactly. Right. I don't know. Yeah. Not a good point by you.
Yeah. All right. We'll get to the hockey stuff in just a second, but obviously, Mike, the biggest topic in hockey was the incredibly powerful interview given by Kyle Beach last night on TSN with Rick Westhead. You know, you were a player, you're now a broadcaster, you're an alumni of the National Hockey League. I just want to kind of get your overall thoughts on just this story as it's evolved this week, and in particular what he had to say last night.
Kudos to him. Kind of the strength and courage it would have taken to do that interview. And it was riveting, and it was a gut punch, and it was tough to see someone be in so much pain still a decade later because of the damage that was done to him back then. And I guess that's where my mind goes first and foremost, to him, to the other player, to the players in Michigan, maybe to the victims of this guy and the things that he did and how it hurt them in their lives, in their relationships, professionally, personally, everything. And how they weren't supported the way they needed to be. And I guess that's where my heart goes initially. Like, God, how could you not feel for Kyle and everybody else that's been involved as a victim? Forget about the Blackhawks and care about them and hopefully, you know, the outpouring of support, hopefully he feels it today and won't feel so alone and not believed and all the stuff he talked about in the interview today, because you know, the hockey world, sports world, world in general, who saw that, would have a lot of compassion for him and what he's been through. That's where that goes. Then there's the disappointment of the Chicago Blackhawks, who were clearly, you know, at a moment where they were solely focused on trying to win a Stanley Cup and not taking care of somebody and dealing with something that their own, you know, HR program would have outlined they would have had to handle differently. Like, they just chose, it seems as though they chose to, you know, we'll deal with it after the end of the final. If we win, then great. And then we'll try to, we don't want to cause a stir, a distraction, whatever you might, however you want to phrase it, which is ridiculous. They put kind of winning ahead of a human. And that is unacceptable. And that's why everyone's, you know, justifiably outraged for how they reacted. It's one of those things. Sports often shows us and is glorified for showing us the best in people and in the world. And whether it's accomplishing a goal or dealing with adversity or coming together as a team or sacrificing or, you know, being courageous or whatever it might be, it's celebrated. And it should be, because like, those are things we can often try to bring into the real world, our regular life. But in many ways, sports sometimes mirrors the worst in society. And I think, you know, this kind of attitude of, you know, sweeping it under the rug, putting our own selfish goals ahead of, you know, taking care of someone else, not believing a victim of this, that happens in society, and it certainly happened here in hockey. And I think that, you know, that's where hockey, like all sports, absolutely has a lot of growth and change that needs to be done. And so that, like, he was let down by so many people that could have helped him, people that should have helped him. He took the right steps. He told the security guy, he told the mental coach, like, that's who you should go to. He should have been protected. He told the PA, and all of them turned a blind eye to it because they didn't want to deal with it. And that is, that has to change. That is awful then, it's the awful now.
Yeah, and JR made the point, and a good one, that, hey, how courageous he was. And I want to take you back, Johnny. I know you're a bit older, but can you imagine that this fella had just come out of junior scoring 52 goals, 11th pick overall, you're up for the playoffs. Imagine back when you were 22 and you've been gone from Bowling Green right into Toronto. I know they didn't make the playoffs that year, but how would you have felt as kind of an extra player? And how, what would be the chances, I guess, that you would speak up had this happened to you at that time, where you're all of a sudden living your dream, and then something like this happens to you?
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Yeah. I can't even begin to put, I mean, I'd like to think I would have said something, but I don't know. I mean, you know, your career is right there, and this is the power dynamic, because I've had this conversation with people in my life here now, who say, well, how could this happen? He's a player. How could a video guy do this to him? He's like, he'd be bigger, he'd be stronger. I'm like, it's not about strength, it's about power. And he felt powerless because he, you know, his career, which he thought was so, you know, which he cared about, was threatened, and he thought was at risk if he said something or he made more noise. And he did say something. That's the thing, he did say something. You know, he didn't go to the reporter, but he took it up the proper channels, and he was let down. I think a lot of people, including potentially that one other person in Chicago maybe, like, didn't say anything. And they would, I could see how at that age you're so impressionable and you're so feeling as though you are at the mercy of whoever holds your dream in their hands, who can help you or hurt you achieve your dream of playing in the NHL, that a lot of young men, young women, I mean, we don't have to look far, look at the soccer, look at gymnastics, like young people who don't say anything because they chase their dream and don't want to risk that by calling people out on things they are doing wrong. I'd like to think I would have said something, but I don't know. I don't know, because time and again, we see much better athletes than me, much stronger people than me, suffer in silence because they don't want to risk their goal of achieving whatever they want to achieve athletically.
Mike, you spent a long time in the game playing it and playing it to the highest level, and now as a broadcaster and still being involved very, very heavily in the game. We spent a lot of time this morning and the last couple of days talking about the culture of hockey and how much has the culture evolved. Simmer talks about his time, you know, in the 80s and about what, you know, locker room culture, culture on the bus, junior hockey, all that stuff. How much has it changed? Has it changed a lot? and how far does it have to go to get to an even acceptable level?
I think it has changed a lot. I think Zimmer could really, you know, like some of the stuff, even when I played, you know, that kind of locker room culture, that kind of, oh, you know, boys will be boys, certainly the language, certainly, you know, sensitivity to the racially charged language sensitive to the LGBTQ community, like that kind of stuff it's not as nearly as prevalent as it was. In fact, it's almost gone. Like, people don't talk like that. People don't use those words. They don't use that language. That has changed a lot. But I think that the strides where it has to go is that hockey is still kind of controlled and run by, you know, a lot of people that are friends with each other and work with each other. And, you know, I don't know if old boys network's the right, quite way to phrase it, but that kind of idea. And, you know, even seeing some of the commentary from coaches that have come around the league about this, and they, like, you know, I have nothing to say. I have a relationship with those people. They're good people. Like, it's just, that's the kind of strides, I think, the last bit more than, or not last, but part of the evolution that the league has to go through, that hockey has to go through to make it a safer place. Like, it just has to become more accepting and welcoming. Not just accepting, welcoming to anything that is different. And that's where hockey has lagged and it has come short for years. Yeah. And it's improved, but that's where it has to get better. And like society, and if we want to be, you know, held up as something to aspire to in society, that, like, that is something that has to change and has to continue to get better.
Yeah, I mean, I see the commercial with PK Subban all the time, guys. I kind of mm-hmm. chuckle because I find diversity in hockey is a bit of a joke, and it has been. But anyways, to that, Johnny, you made a great point, though. But is this as much that society has changed and the people now playing are more mature versus is it? I think hockey, to my point, is almost reacted to society versus changing society.
Yeah, which comes first, right? I don't think we were at the forefront of this, were we? We weren't leading this charge.
Like the CHL has done a lot of things they put in place because they had to, because it was actually bad for business, you know, and
right.
Credit to them, had to get an education program because kids were going to school, had to stop hazing because we know it's not right, but it's bad for business.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem, is that, you know, a lot of people that were in the position to make these decisions over the years have grown up in this kind of culture and maybe aren't as offended or don't recognize why it's so distasteful for people. But once they realize it's bad for business for whatever reason, then maybe they go down that road. I do agree. We've not been the leaders in this regard, but maybe we can help going forward. But yeah, like it's part of the challenge, and I think some of that is the people that run it. Some of that is it's a similar demographic that plays it, you know. There are issues there that have to be dealt with as we go along.
Gary Bettman is going to meet with Joel Quenneville this afternoon. He's going to meet with Kevin Cheveldayoff on Monday. They were both said in the report that was released this week to have been in that meeting, which took place in which the details on the assault were first made known to the powers that be with the Chicago Blackhawks. It would be some conjecture on your part. We don't know the intimate details, nor do we suspect that those will all be given out. But what is your kind of, if Joel Quenneville was in that meeting, and whether he said anything or not, spoke up in that meeting or not, the fact that nothing was done in that moment in time, what do you think the commissioner may decide about Joel Quenneville?
Yeah, I've wrestled with it. Well, first off, I don't know why he should not have coached last night. Whatever is the outcome of today's meeting, Joel Quenneville shouldn't have coached last night. He should have been on his way to New York to have that meeting yesterday. Like, deal with it in the immediacy that this warrants and not push it back to today or Monday for Chevy or whoever. Like they pushed it back already once 11 years ago, and we saw what happened. I've wrestled with this. I mean, if Joel Quenneville if he was in there, like, and apparently he was, and whether or not he said anything, as you mentioned, you know, is it? I don't know. I guess I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks, yeah, he probably should not be coaching right now. He's because he's, you know, he's part of his job as a coach is to take care of the people that he that play for him, and he didn't do that to the degree he needed to back then. But you know, if you're the sixth most powerful person and you speak up in that bill, that say, yes, take it to the cops, deal with this, we have to deal with it right away, and then you know you return your attention to doing your job, trusting that the people five above you will do theirs, and then you don't follow up on it because you're in the Stanley Cup final. Still unacceptable. I wrestle with it. I don't know. I don't have an absolute answer. My gut reaction is like, you know, he shouldn't be running a team because he didn't do the job he needed to do to take care of the guys that he was in charge of. But it's not an easy answer, I guess, to me. Because if you're, you know, if Chevy was there and he was the fifth man down the, you know, on the org chart and the people above him said they're going to deal with it. And then for 2 weeks, they returned their attention to the Stanley Cup final. I could see how in that moment when you're young, you would kind of let that slide and trust that people above you would take care of it. I don't know. I don't know where you guys come down on this. I've wrestled with it. I don't have an absolute answer.
Johnny, a statement I made yesterday, I've been to one Stanley Cup final and I put myself in that spot. Would you agree that if after winning that and going to the finals for the first time in forever, if an emergency meeting's called that night, you would never forget, first of all, that you were in that meeting, and you would probably not forget a lot of what was said on a sensitive subject like that?
Oh, well, the idea that Joel Quenneville hadn't heard about this before, which he said this summer, I don't buy that one bit. Now, I mean, there's nothing against the law or about lying to the media. Yeah. He's not under oath. But he wasn't truthful there. Like, he 100% knew. Like, you're not, I don't care if you're the euphoria of getting to the final. You hear about what those allegations were. You don't forget. You might, you know, 11 years later, the exact phrasing of who said what and when. But you know what happened. Like, you're not surprised by, I've never heard of these allegations. And so, I don't buy that for one second. And the phrase that stuck out, and if you read the report, saying, we're going to finals. I don't want to deal with this distraction, which was kind of something like that was attributed to Joel Quenneville. That's a tough soundbite. That's a tough quote because that directly suggests you don't care about that as much as you care about trying to win, which is everything wrong about this situation.
Yeah, when you know, we've been sort of hashing this out for the last couple of days and trying to imagine ourselves in that moment in time. And first of all, none of us think if what was said at that meeting, you know what the video coach did, no excuse that he should have been suspended, fired on the spot, whatever. But also, I think if we're being honest with ourselves, we could totally, or I'm going to say this, I could totally see that conversation happening of, guys, we're 2 weeks away from winning the Stanley Cup here. Let's remove the video coach from this. This is a terrible situation. Mm-hmm. Let's remove him. That's important. We have to do that right now. But, you know, when the president says, McDonough says, we'll deal with this after the Stanley Cup final, I could totally see that conversation happening 100%.
Yeah, which doesn't make it right
at all.
Like, you can walk and chew gum. Like, you can play hockey and go for the Stanley Cup final, and at the bare minimum, you're like, okay, video coach, you no longer work here. Like, we're going to have to investigate this, and I guess you can't fire him until you find out if it's true or not, but, like, okay, you don't get to be around the team anymore. He's a video guy. Like, I don't want to diminish video guys. Like, somebody else can step in there and create freakout tapes or whatever he was doing in that moment. They should have taken him out away from the team right away. And then even guys, like, so many times, like, so whatever, the bad decision to wait 3 weeks till the season's over, awful, and have him around. But how do you then just let him walk? We're going to have an investigation, or you can leave. Okay, I'll leave. Why would you leave? You just want a Stanley Cup, or it's such a pivotal piece of it. You're leaving because there's something to hide. Like that shouldn't have stopped the Blackhawks from investigating further. They should have given him that option. Like, we're not going to let you walk away and just pretend it never happened. We're going to find out what happened. Yes, I could see, unfortunately, an organization saying that we're going to remove the coach. We'll kind of park the investigation or start nibbling around it, but we're going to leave the focus on the ice, which shouldn't have happened, should never happen. But that's part of the problem in sports, is win at all costs, whether it's ignoring something like this, whether it's potentially doing damage to your physical well-being, all that stuff, which we celebrate, also at times is not the right thing to do.
Yeah, pure speculation on my part, Johnny, but I said next day Joel has a meeting, probably meets with his staff, and I also said, hey, pretty good chance you're heading to the finals. You meet with your leadership group. Do you find it, and even if it wasn't a meeting, do you find it hard to believe that Jonathan Toews didn't know anything about this and the rest of the crew?
That's hard for me to say. Sooner, now obviously if there was a meeting, like apparently there was some jokes or poorly attempted jokes made or some words said to Kyle, whatever. So people clearly knew. But I also know in the playoffs, like, the Black Aces are not around the team. Like, you know, they're on a different schedule. You don't cross paths. You don't talk to them. They kind of hang out on their own. So it's not beyond me to think that at that moment, May 23rd, post-meeting, in the next few days prior to the final or during the final, that the players would have for sure known. I don't think so. I don't think that would be the case. Some might. And then once it kind of started leaking around, then, of course, you know how guys like to talk, and on the bus, on the plane, it would spread quickly. But if it didn't get to the main locker room, I could see them not knowing. Then I could not see them not knowing the next fall or the next summer when this no longer on the team. Like, then they're like, why is he not here? Then it would have leaked out. Then it would have come out. So I could believe in the moment, but maybe not long term.
It's an extremely troubling, all of it is just really, and we wish we could bring you on and just talk about the fun parts of hockey, and, you know, even guys getting fired or whatever is for hockey stuff is, that's what we like to do. But this is an incredibly complex and ever-evolving story that I don't think we're going to hear the end of for a while now. So no time to talk about the real games. We'll do that with you. You're going to join us tomorrow because Pooley's on West Coast time, apparently needs his beauty sleep. So you're on, what, Midwest time? You're going to be down in Dallas?
I'll be down in Dallas this afternoon and ready for the game tomorrow. So, yes, we'll let Pooley get his beauty rest, and I'll step in for him tomorrow.
That's a gamer right there. Mike Johnson, or as one of our texters called you, Mike Poulin. I like that Mike Poulin guy.
Michel Poulin.
We're here in Ottawa, en français. Michel Poulin, he's a good one. So he'll be back with us tomorrow. Safe travels to Dallas. Really appreciate the time and the insight this morning. We'll chat tomorrow.
All right, thanks, guys. You have a good day.
TSN's Mike Johnson on TSN 1200 is a presentation of Myers Auto Group.
Yeah, I'm going to take your word on that. Welcome back, everybody. 8:45. Not here to question it. I just kind of...
You question all the music I play when you don't know what it is.
Okay. I'd like to think I'm hip and with it.
Well,
I've not heard of AJR before.
They got some great tracks.
Can I make a music request, Hammer?
Please do not ask for who's the guy?
Roger Whittaker.
Roger Whittaker.
No,
yes.
Big 80s.
No. That new Elton John song where the girl, Adu or somebody, is singing with him.
Adele?
No, I think it's Adu.
Okay. There's Adele and Adu? That's confusing.
Okay. Well, anyways, they've redone one of his songs, and a fairly popular singer is in this. Every time it comes on now, guys, I'm like, this is so good.
Is it. Dua Lipa?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Dua Lipa.
Who I call Dupa Lupa?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter hates that. I go, oh, you're listening to Dupa Lupa. Dad! Bad dad jokes.
Yeah. No, that's exactly. That's a nice song. She's excellent.
All right. King of the Grill contest coming up. Cue to call on that. Stand by. Grand prize coming up Monday, so you're down to your last six chances to get your name on the list. Pick 'em pool. Get your picks in. NFL Week 8 kicks off tonight. Green Bay, Arizona. Looks like no Davante Adams, pretty much for sure. J.J. Watt out for the year. Shoulder surgery for Arizona. Big miss for them. 6-1 versus 7-0. Pretty good for a Thursday night is normally we get the Jacksonvilles and the Jets of the world. So this is and I know they set the schedule ahead of time, so you never know. But for getting into Week 8, this will be one of the stronger Week 8 Thursday night matchups we'll have seen in a long time. So looking forward to hopefully a good game. We'll have it for you here on TSN 1200 tonight. At 8 o'clock, Packers and Cardinals. Thanks again to Mike Johnson for joining us. You can hear how much when Mike answers the questions. how much he, like everybody, that, and whether you're involved in hockey, have a past history in hockey, or whether you're just a fan, how much everybody is struggling with this subject, and the details that have come out, and what's yet to come, yeah, and how yeah. people involved in the middle of it should be yeah. dealt with. We all have yeah. opinions on it.
Yeah.
And opinions are like, you know what's, we all have one. There are wrong opinions, yeah. but everybody's welcome to their opinion. And, you know, you can hear Mike is as plugged in as anybody, yeah. Yeah. and even he's struggling with the answers.
Well, it is, but also, and it just says this goes along, and it has nothing to do that I know Joel or I know Chevy or anybody else. It's not like they're family or close friends there. It's in making sure as well, as we discuss any of these stories kind of in real time, just trying to be as accurate as possible, right, on who actually said what, how is it played out, and each day we get a little bit more information. I mean, that's the real key, and, you know, obviously for Rick Westhead, this is a part of a story that probably the Chicago Blackhawks and Stan Bowman, and going to this year or years ago, probably thought the last thing that they had to worry about or think about. So credit to him, credit for Mr. Beach for stepping forward, and, yeah, now a lot of discussions begin, and lots of people share the blame.
This text comes in from unsigned at 12-1200. Again, when you text us, standard messaging rates apply. Good morning, guys. It's a tough subject. Appreciate you tackling it. Another disgusting angle is the way it played out, where the player would have been drafted by the previous regime in 2008, the Dale Tallon regime, and perhaps a decision was made early on the player by new management for whatever reason. No excuse whatsoever. How come there wasn't a take care of your own player's mentality? But they seem to treat it like he wasn't their guy, end quote.
And Texter, first of all, an unbelievable point. And again, we'll use a name, but do I think if this was Jonathan Toews and he had come into the organization, this happened, it would have been treated differently, JR? Absolutely. Now, as to the separation, Stan Bowman was there. But it would point to, at 20 years old, some of your thought of the player, Jer. I think that's a great point. And because, yeah, I mean, if you're the highly prized Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, do I think that this would have been different? And certainly if you were a full-time member of the Blackhawks players, oh, absolutely. So, no, it's a real good point.
Yeah. Because we have not in terms of this particular aspect, yeah, but yeah. we see when general managers are fired, new general manager comes in, yeah. right? And doesn't, not just hockey, any sport. Yeah. It's yeah. like the guy can be the first round draft pick last year. New guy comes in. Oh. He's the other guy's guy.
Oh,
and,
hey.
if he's no good, boom, yeah. he's out of there.
JR, of all people that have been mentioned in this story is Nick Boynton. We draft Nick in the 97 draft with an old staff. And then George McPhee's at the table, but not really involved. George had already decided he hated Nick Boynton because there was a tough kid that got drafted by Florida right after, and George wanted toughness. By the time we got to training camp, Nick rolls in as the first pick. Ron Wilson, who's the coach now, hates him. George McPhee hates him. You guys kind of looking around thinking,
no chance.
I didn't think, I just got drafted here. This is a bit weird. What does he do a couple of years ago? Later goes back in the draft, and oh, there's just no doubt that shift, and it is such a good point on just how this fella, he would be feeling about coming in. I'm the 11th pick. I got 50 goals. I'm coming to be part of this. Like, they've thought enough of me, because I said to Hammer JR, it's probably on the pecking order. If they've got 10 black aces, he might be number 10. Do you know what I mean? Like, they didn't bring him in to necessarily be a player. What they do at that age, they bring in for experience to be around, right? That's the whole part of it.
But to that point, though, Simmer, yeah. if you're... because he played junior hockey all year,
yeah.
and then got called up to the American Hockey League when the junior season was over. Yeah. That team got beat out in the playoffs, then he gets called up. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if you get called up to be a black ace, there's an outside chance that you're going to eventually get called on to the team because of injury, but unlikely. So the black aces are made up of, in a lot of cases, guys who they think very highly of because they think they may be future players, and you want them to experience, go through what it's like to go through a playoff. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, for sure. But my point, that's a great, and I don't want to say both, but it also not doing, but yeah, exactly that. Hey, you're the 11th pick overall. And it may have been a case as well where they hadn't really been around you. You know, if you have a new staff, you have a new group coming in, you know, it might be also a little bit more of an assessment. I don't know if they had summer camp. He would have been to a couple training camps, but you know, it might have also been getting a feel for the player.
A couple more texts come in. None of this matters. All the people need to be fired or step down. That's one text. Another one, typical NHL. They always seem to sweep things under the carpet to protect the billionaires, concussions, painkillers, and other drug abuses. Too many questions, but I'll ask this. How is it they have an executive meeting and not take minutes? That comes from Richie. Well, I don't think it was formally an executive meeting. He's talking about the meeting after in which this abuse was alleged to have been told to everybody, or not even alleged, it was. Simmer, you've been in not a, a similar circumstance, but a me. I don't.
Nobody.
No, nobody. No, there's no, not a, a secretary there taking, taking notes.
No, it's not. It, that, you know, that protocol, as far as at least the hockey side, Jer, you know, you meet 6-7 hours for a draft. There are times where I can think maybe, no. You know what? What would happen in, okay, if you're really talking in a hockey meeting, Jer, most of what you're talking about is reports that you've already filed. So that's a lot of the discussion. But no, there would be no. But to the, what I keep going back to, Jer, I personally, 10 years later, could tell you where the meeting was at. I could tell you what I had on that day. And I'd based on a subject like this, because as I said, you're dealing also in a very heterosexual society when this is also between two men and what has gone down. I'd be able to tell you almost everything that was said in that meeting. And the chances are in a meeting like that, Jer, if there's 9 people, I don't think outside of the big three that anyone, outside of McDonough, Bowman, and Joel Quenneville, nobody else would probably say anything. Like, I wouldn't be as the assistant manager start being, you know, you would be in there listening, and that would be dictated by those three people, and I'd be able to tell you pretty much everything that was said that day, even 10 years later.
Right. Or, yeah. You may have to paraphrase a little bit, well, but idea of what was said, for sure.
And if an over-the-top statement was made by Joel Quenneville that the Stanley Cup is more important than sexual assault to you know, word for word, never forget that the rest of my life, and I probably would never talk to Joel Quenneville again.
Right, right. But again, if it wasn't that direct quote, but it was something along the lines of, guys, we got to try and win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
You know,
let's win the Stanley Cup and deal with this later, which is wrong. But it, to me, would you not agree, though? That's a big difference on the way you're saying
well,
it.
Well, it is, but it isn't, Simmer. I mean, it really is saying the same thing. It's saying that, you know, the what's right in front of us right now, winning the Stanley Cup is more important.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. You're right. But in phrasing it, Jer, all I'm saying is that the sway of if you're Joel Quenneville and you said, listen, right now we're not going to deal with it, but we're going to deal with it. Or if even to your point, if he said, listen, well, this is a Stanley Cup finals, meaning we're not going to deal with it ever. Oh, for sure. But as I said, the phrasing of that, of let's set it aside for right now, focus and then deal later, or I don't care, you know, that kind of a mentality, then, yeah, like you said, it doesn't have to be necessarily phrased that way. It's a bad look of, you know, as you say, just making it go away or pretend it never happened.
I'm trying to foresee how Joel Quenneville survives this. I just can't see that path. I really don't.
Now he must have some allies as far as Bill Zito and the ownership in Florida, JR, because I think in this case this isn't a general manager decision. Most ownership groups, I would assume, if I own the Florida Panthers, Joel's not coaching yesterday. This is that level now, right? This isn't Bill Zito's call. Hey, the owner of your team, listen, step aside. So,
do you think that conversation happened yesterday, where the GM would have called the owner and said, "Do you think this is right that he coaches tonight?"
Oh yeah, I would think so. Put it this way, I wouldn't make that decision as a manager myself, right? Like, that's above me.
You may say this is my recommendation, but what do you think? You're the owner. Ultimately, you have the final say.
But again, if you were even as a manager at this point, JR, that could be career-altering for you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm Bill Zito, well, I think it's fine, Joel. Hey, go to ownership, and what does the owner think? And I'm assuming you'd have a meeting with Joel as well and want to hear his side of the story. That's just my guess.
Yeah, and we don't know that that didn't happen.
No, exactly. But right. I mean, that'd be, like I said, if the manager would be, you'd be adding on to what you don't need to if you're Bill Zito by even making that decision. Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, this is something that your owner should be saying, hey, let's step in here. We like you a lot, Joel. We respect what you're saying, but this isn't the time for you to be coaching right now.
Yeah. I'm going through the meeting in my head between Gary Bettman and Joel Quenneville, and assuming Joel Quenneville is going to want to have his agent with him.
Oh,
for sure, 100%.
Like, Gary Bettman, at the end of the day, as well, is a lawyer, a trained lawyer. What is this like? I mean, this to me, and I thought Johnny made a good point as well. I'm shocked that both of them haven't been flown into New York right away. I don't even understand. I guess. I'm wondering why you would just say, well, I'm going to go to Florida to meet with Joel, which to me is more time sensitive.
Meeting is in New York.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yes, I'm sorry.
So
okay.
that's what I read last night was that Joel Quenneville is going to New York this afternoon.
Okay. So that's different. But even in the case of Chevy, I'm like, okay, well,
yeah, Monday.
Let's get together Monday.
Yeah.
Because I do think Chevy, other than starting off on the wrong foot, if he is honest in this whole process, JR, I think he can, he'll, I don't know what's going to happen to him, but I don't think it's career ending. But for Joel, this is a fork in the road. Like, this is just, he's got to absolutely be able to spin this, deny this a completely different direction. Or, and as I said, if that actual quote is attached to him, yeah, we'll never hear from him again.
Yeah. Even if it's not as, as was described, even if it's, like I said, even if it's some, if it's words to the effect of, we've got a Stanley Cup to win, we'll deal with the other thing. That putting the Stanley Cup first before this victim, you don't survive. You can't.
Yeah.
You shouldn't, and you can't.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Now, I will say, and again, I'm not going to, all of them, but in the direct part of that, the coach is certainly responsible to some extent. At the end of the day, the general manager, certainly the president of the hockey team, the fact that they're JR, as far as a pecking order, they hold more responsibility, but I'm not going to take away fault. All three of them are at, you know, hey, that is your job as the head coach, general manager, president of the team, to handle this thing properly. And I don't think it goes much lower than that. Like, to me, players or assistant GMs or scouts or other people, no. President, general manager, head coach are in a meeting. All three of them are at fault.
Yeah, and for Kevin Cheveldayoff, who will have his meeting, as you said, I mean, you were a former assistant general manager. You likely probably didn't say anything in that meeting.
No,
you would
no.
see. And at that point, he's a young executive, right? And not that this makes it right. I'm just saying, you can. I'm just trying to sort of put myself in the shoes.
He's 43 years old.
Right? You're in that moment in time, and you're going, you're thinking to yourself, holy crap, I can't believe this. But you're not saying it, and you're going, there are many people in this meeting above me who have said they're going to take care of it. I'm going to assume they're going to take care of it.
Yeah. Now
you should recycle that and go, hey, did we take care of X?
Yeah.
That's part of your roles, and correct me if I'm wrong, as assistant GM, is to remind the GM, you're kind of like the bench coach in baseball. Hey, don't forget about this. This is important, right?
Well, in this case here, JR, when it's such a bad thing, if I've got to remind the manager of it, then do you know what? Probably the fact that nothing has happened means I shouldn't say anything. But the dynamic between an assistant GM and a GM would be, if I was in that meeting and if I had worked for George McPhee, John Ferguson, David Poyle, chances are we would have talked after. And most managers, you know, at least the people I worked for, I was very young, JR, but there would have been a back and forth. They would have asked some advice or, you know, I know with David Poyle for sure, we would have probably went to his office and sat down and, well, David Poyle would have reacted right away, JR, so he wouldn't have needed it, but he would ask you, hey, what do you think here? What do you think we should do? You know, it would be that immediate.
So David Poyle, similar situation. David Poyle is the general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks in 2010. Exact same time. You think in that moment of time he would have done something differently?
Oh, I without a doubt. You know, and there's just the morality.
Suspended the coach?
My God. Like, you know, and now would he take it to a legal level? Like have him arrested? You know, you'd have to understand the circumstance here. But, absolutely. I mean, David's greatest strength is managing people and handling situations like this. So, I have no doubt and wouldn't matter. And David wants to win a Stanley Cup so bad. And I will say this, Jared, different strokes, you know, different levels for different people. If this is the head coach of your hockey team, how are you going to deal with it? Well, that takes a hole. I still think David Poyle would do the right thing. But eliminating the video coach, like if this is what's going to ruin careers and first of all, you should do the right thing for anybody in society, JR. But I just can't for the life of me understand why that would happen.
Mm. For Kevin Cheveldayoff, him doubling down again by saying he had no knowledge of this meeting. Yeah. Again, the right course of action is always to tell the truth.
Yeah.
By him saying again this summer, and this is after it came out that this meeting had been held and he was at it, and him denying again that he was at it, and now we've got an independent investigation that says he was at this meeting. As you said, if you were in that meeting, there's no way you would have forgotten you were in the meeting. This is what to me is going to make it difficult for him, and I'm not saying to survive. I agree, it's different than Joel Quenneville. He can go to the card of, again, there are many people above me. He probably didn't speak at that meeting, as you said. I just don't understand the play from in my perspective. Here's what you do. You say, I was at the meeting. We completely dropped the ball on that. It was completely wrong. I am at fault.
Yeah.
and I am prepared to take the consequences. Yeah. That's what you say. Yeah. That's the proper thing to say.
And here in the case of Chevy guys, or Jer, what's going to happen is that, okay, in the summertime, you say no comment. Because I could also say, if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, listen, Gary, you know what, I had to fend off the media. I didn't want to turn it into a story. But now when you've done this, now you have lied, and you're going to have to admit to Gary Bettman you lied. Because if you walk in the room and say to Gary, you know, Gary, I don't remember the meeting, well, you're in real trouble. But now as he walks back and admits he's in the meeting, he's probably going to get fired. Because for the Winnipeg Jets, what's the look on them?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like he is, I think he could have, of all the people that are hockey related, could have worked through this knowing some of the dynamics, unless he was directly involved mm-hmm. in the cover up, which I think that had a lot more to do with Al MacIsaac. And that's kind of what I hear and what I see. In the case of Chevy, had he just been honest from the start, I think he would have been fine. But what I think is going to happen here, JR, is that he's going to force himself out of a job. Because as I said, as far as public confidence in what wouldn't have been a huge story in Winnipeg, we'll now circle back to, well, you said you weren't there. Now you've told the commissioner you were. Do you know what I mean? I think that leads to his firing.
And the Winnipeg Jets, like a lot of, not that it's acceptable in any market. That is it's a small market in a Canadian city where hockey is the ultimate focus. And you don't walk away from that.
No, and it's also the origin of Graham James too.
Yeah, good point. You might. Somehow, there'd be a lesser impact on your fan base if you're with the New York Rangers. In Winnipeg, you're the face, the hockey face of the franchise. You lied about one of the worst things that's happened in hockey in potentially decades.
Since Graham James and everyone lied about that.
But depending on how deep this goes, and we haven't heard about the depths that this might reach.
And if Joel Quenneville's coaching in Winnipeg, guys, he's not coaching last night. You know, yeah. Nobody in Florida even cares because they don't care about the hockey team. So your point, absolutely. And that's really now with Kevin Cheveldayoff. Yeah, it's like I said, and it does eerily bring you back to all the people pretending they didn't know about Graham James, right? And everybody in the Western Hockey League, everybody in the hockey world knew about it.
And and back then it was somebody else will take care of it, right? And nobody stepped forward and took care of it. And then what happened, and unfortunately what happened, because it's not just, again, Kyle Beach that we're talking about here. We're talking about 2 weeks later, when the Hawks didn't do anything about it, at the Stanley Cup party or parade or whatever, he attempts to assault a 22-year-old intern. Yeah. And then after that, there is alleged to have been incidents at the universities that he went to after he ended being with the Hawks. And then he goes on and sexually assaults a 16-year-old at a high school. Because nothing was done in the first place that should have been done.
And so, that's a part of all these stories, JR, going back to Graham James. And then I was kind of last night just kind of debriefing. And, you know, I have two boys, 23 and 19. It doesn't matter boy or girls, but Mira has two boys, 13 and 11. If this trail had then led to anybody affected in my life, how would you end up feeling? That's where, to me, it even goes next level. It's not just how you dealt with it. The fact with Graham James back in the day that the cycle continued and you allowed there to be more victims and more lives ruined, that to me is the real, like, that's where that just goes next level for me.
All right, always welcome your thoughts. Again, via text at 12-1200, via Twitter at TSN1200, on the phones at 750-1200. We always love to hear from you, so continue your feedback. That's awesome. We'll take a break, get a top-of-the-hour news and sports update. We'll come back. We'll do our King of the Grills contest. We've also got we'll delve into a bunch of stuff in the last hour, including the Sens down in Dallas getting set to take on the Stars. Latest on the lineup changes, World Series. Braves and Astros now tied at 1. Talk a little B-Sens as well. All in the next hour, right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.